This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
To proceed. So today, inshallah, we will finish the book of bequests, and we will have three points to cover, or three topics to cover today. One is the when the bequests become void, what happens? The other one is the executor of bequests, which is al-Musa ilayhi. And the third one is the end of guardianship. What happens when people grow up, or when insane people recover, and the guardianship ends. So the first one is basically what happens when the bequest or part of the bequest becomes void. The Sheikh said, Imam Ibn Qudamah rahimahullah ta'ala, who died in the year 620 after Hijrah, said in his book, Umdat al-Fiqh, Faslun idha batalat al-wasiyya. Subsection, if the bequest becomes annulled. Idha batalat al-wasiyya aw ba'duha raja'a ila al-waratha, falaw wassa an yushtara abdu zaydin bimi'a, fayu'taq famat, aw lam yabi'hu sayyiduhu, falmi'atu lil-waratha. وَإِنْ وَصَّى بِمِئَةٍ تُنْفَقُ عَلَىٰ فَرَسٍ حَبِيسٍ فَمَاتَ فَهِيَ لِلْوَرَثِ. If the bequest or part of it becomes annulled, then it goes back to the heirs. So if he instructed that Zayd's slave be purchased for 100 and emancipated, but that slave dies before the execution of the will, or his master refuses to sell him, then the 100 goes back to the heirs. If he instructed that 100 be spent on a horse, which was designated as waqf, an endowment, but the horse dies, then it will be for the heirs. In other words, if the wasiyya was not executable, then the money goes back to the inheritors, to the heirs, because where else it will go, right? That makes sense. So that's it. Whenever the wasiyya becomes void for any reason, the wasiyya will become void if I make a wasiyya for you and before you and then you need to accept it after I die. Before you accept it, you died. Before you accept it, you died. Then in this case, it goes back to the waratha, to the inheritors. Okay. So now, if there is no way that we can get to this, if your inheritors will accept it, it will be acceptable. But if you die before my death, then for sure the wasiyya will go back to the waratha. If you reject the wasiyya after my death, for sure it will go to the waratha. If there is no one to accept it after my death, for sure it will go back to the waratha. Okay. Yes. Yes. They can accept it. Yes. Then the Sheikh said, وَلَوْ وَصَّى أَنْ يَحُجَّ عَنْهُ زَيْدٍ بِأَلْفٍ فَلَمْ يَحُجَّ فَهِيَ لِلْوَرَثَةِ وَإِنْ قَالَ الْمُوصَى لَهُ أَعْطُونِي الزَّائِدَ عَلَى نَفَقَةِ الْحَجِّ لَمْ يُعْطَ شَيْئًا. If he instructs that Zayd make a pilgrimage on his behalf with an allocated fund of 1,000, but Zayd does not do so, then the 1,000 will be for the heirs. If the one designated for Hajj, which is Zayd, asks for the difference between the 1,000 and the expenses that were actually necessary for Hajj, he should not be given anything. So if someone said, this 1,000 is for Zayd to make Hajj on my behalf, Zayd, after he dies, says, I am not making Hajj, but the Hajj costs only 800. He meant for me to get 200 for myself and to spend 800 on Hajj. Zayd does not get anything because the 1,000 was given for Hajj to be made. If Zayd refuses to make Hajj, he will not get the 200 difference between the cost of Hajj and the designated 1,000. He says, وَلَوْ مَاتَ الْمُوصَى لَهُ قَبْلَ مَوْتِ الْمُوصِي أَوْ رَدَّ الْوَصِيَّ رُدَّ إِلَى الْوَرَثَ. He said, if the legatee dies, al-Musa lahu is the legatee, if the legatee dies before the testator, or if he declines to accept the bequest, it is given back to the heirs. Is that clear? We said that before. If the legatee dies before the testator, that's the recipient of the bequest, dies before the giver of the bequest, then that money will go back to the inheritors of the testator, the giver of the bequest. The same applies also if the legatee rejected, did not accept the bequest. Can someone do this? Yes. They would not like to receive favors from somebody in particular. You know, bequeath someone, X bequeaths something to Y. Y does not want to receive any favors from X. After X dies, Y says, I am not, you know, interested in whatever he bequeathed to me. Then that money or that property goes back to X's inheritors. Then, وَلَوْ وَصَّى لِحَيِّنْ وَمَيِّتٍ فَلِلْحَيِّ نِصْفُ الْوَصِيِّ. If he bequeathes something to both a living person and a dead person, the living person gets half of the bequest. So if he bequeaths a building to two people, one is alive and one is dead, the living person gets half of the building, not the entire building, gets half of the building, because the bequest became void concerning the one who died. So the one who's living gets only his share. وإن وصى لوارثه وأجنبيه بثلث ماله فللأجنبي السدس ويقف سدس الوارث على الإجازة. If he bequeaths one third of his estate to an heir and to someone who is not his kin, the non-kin will get one sixth, and the one sixth for the heir will be pending the approval of the other heirs. Remember last time we said that he cannot give more than one third of his estate in, he cannot bequeath more than one third of his estate, and he cannot bequeath to inheritors, right? He cannot bequeath to inheritors. He cannot give more than one third of his estate. What if he did? Then it will be pending the approval of the inheritors. If they approved it, it will go through. If they did not approve it, it will not go through. We will have to limit his bequest to one third and only for non-inheritors. Only for non-inheritors. So if he says one third of my estate goes to my father and Hassan, and Hassan is his neighbor. Okay? So he dies. Hassan, who's his neighbor, will get his one-sixth. He meant to say to my father equally, share the equally by my father and Hassan. Hassan will get the one-sixth automatically, because Hassan does not need to wait for the approval of the heirs. He will get this one-sixth automatically. But his father cannot get his one-sixth until the other heirs approve of this. Because his father is one of the heirs, he does not get any part of the wasiyah until the rest of the heirs are fine with it and approve of it. And as we said before, even if they approve it, according to the Hanbali, it is still sinful to bequeath to an heir, according to the authorized position in the madhab, although there are three different positions, you know, haram, makruh, and mubah, you know, impermissible, disliked, and permissible. So, but the authorized view on the madhab is that it is still haram to bequeath. And in this case, like we said so many times before, if someone is deserving of you know, like one of your kids has a disability or something and you want to give them more. Give them more during your life. And if you want to give them more, but you do not want to give them more that they can dispose of, then you make a waqf in their name. You make a waqf in their name. Make a trust for them during your life. And in this case, if that basically discrimination is justifiable because one kid has disability, so it is justifiable to give that kid a little bit more, then inshallah you'll be safe with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the Day of Judgment. You will have to answer to any injustice, you know, concerning any injustice. You have to answer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala concerning any injustice on the Day of Judgment. But if some kid, one of your kids, does have a disability, and you give them one third, one half of your inheritance, you put it in a trust for them, that is still allowable, and inshallah it is not... it's not condemnable if there is justification. And in this case, there would be justification. Okay, but you cannot bequeath to them, because if you bequeath to them, first of all, it will be haram according to the authorized position in the Hanbali madhab, although it's controversial. Second, when will the inheritors get to make up their mind concerning the approval or disapproval of this? Not during your life. Because during their life, they may tell you, yes, we will give our brother or our sister, you know, whatever it is that you want. We will give them that, you know, building or that property because of their condition or because of their circumstances. And then you die and they take it back and they say, no, we will not. Can they do that? Yes, they can. Because, you know, their approval or their disapproval is consequential upon your death, not prior to it. Because that is when they become deserving of the estate. And that is when they can make up their mind finally. Okay. So the way to helping someone who has special circumstances or special needs is by making a trust for them during your life. Then the Sheikh started to talk about Bab al-Musa ilayhi, chapter on the executor of the bequest. And we said before that when we talk about bequests, we're talking about five different things. We're talking about al-wasiyya, which is the act of bequeathing. We're talking about al-wasay or al-musa ilayhi. Al-wasay or al-musa ilayhi, which is the executor of the bequest. We're talking about al-musi, which is the bequeather or the testator, the giver of the bequest. We're talking about al-musa lahu, which is the legatee or the receiver of the request. And we're talking about al-musa bihi, I think. Yes, that's the only one that's left. One, two, three, four, yes, five. That's the only one that's left. Al-Musa bi, which is the bequeathed property. Do you remember that we finished everything except this? We talked about the testator. Do you remember what we said about the testator? Who can be a testator? Who can be a testator? Huh? The one who can give a gift and children, the discerning children, you know, who cannot give a gift but they can bequeath, and people under interdiction, mahjur alayhi lisafa, because of their financial imprudence, they cannot give a gift but they can bequeath. So everyone who has the capacity to give a gift, in addition to this, discerning children and people who are interdicting for their financial imprudence. They can bequeath, although they cannot give a gift. And we said they can bequeath because it is after their death. It would not harm them. It's limited to one third of their estate, so it would not harm their inheritors. Okay. So remember, we talked about al-musa lahu. Remember, we talked about al-musa lahu. What did we say about al-musa lahu? The legatee. So we said, what are the differences between, you know, al-musa lahu, anyone who can receive a gift, but who else can get a bequest, can be a legatee in addition? You know, one of the things we said, the fetus in the womb, okay? If they were proven to be in the womb, you know, at the time of the death. But we also said that there's like a little bit of difference between those who can inherit and those who can get a bequest. Because you may not be able to inherit, but you can get a bequest. Such as what? You know, like al-Harbi, for instance, Murtad, the apostate and the citizen of the warring state and so on. So bequest is basically more flexible in this regard than inheritance. You could bequeath to them, but they cannot inherit you. And we talked about the bequeath, the property. Remember what we said about the bequeath, the property? And I'm not going over everything. I'm just like trying to refresh your memory. Remember what we said about the bequeath, the property? What is the difference between the bequeath, the property, and the sellable property? You could bequeath certain things. You know, bequest is also more flexible here than selling. You could bequeath certain things that you cannot sell. Give me two examples.
Dogs,
yes. And impure substances that have some benefit. Why is it? Because you cannot sell them because they are not, you don't have even ownership over them. This is not mal muhtaram that you have ownership of. It is not recognized property. It's not a recognized asset that has a recognized value by the Sharia. Doesn't have recognized the value by the Sharia, but it is called what? It's not called, it is called ikhtisas, which means that you have rights to it. You know, not ownership of it, right to it. You have a right to your dog, even though it's not a valuable asset, it doesn't have a value. At least according to the Maliki, Shafi'is, and Hanbalis, the Hanafis would allow the selling of dogs. The Jumhur, the Maliki, Shafi'is, and Hanbalis do not allow the selling of dogs. So we're talking about the Jumhur here, who will not allow the selling of dogs. They say that you have ikhtisas, that this dog belongs to you. So if you have ikhtisas, if it belongs to you, then you can pass it on as a bequest, although you cannot sell it. So there are differences. So wasiyya is pretty flexible. And then we talked about the act of bequeathing itself, and what did we say about the ruling of bequeathing? What is the ruling of bequeathing? What is the default ruling of bequeathing? If we have to say a default, that there is some default. Mustahab, when does it become wajib to bequeath, to write your will, at least, to write your will? When does it become wajib to write your will? When you have liabilities, whether to Allah or to the people, when you have debts, when you're liable for debts to Allah or the people, then you will have to write your will. If you don't have liabilities, then it stays as mustahab. When does it become makruh to bequeath property? When does it become disliked? Yes. When you have dependents who are needy and you have little estate or sort of little property to pass on. Your assets are, you know, little and you have needy dependents. Then it is disliked for you to take out of that little property that you have and give to others when you have needy dependents. Now we're going to talk about the one that is left here. We talked about the Musi already, stay there. We'll talk about the one that is left here, which is the executor of the bequest. And then you have, like, you don't have to, but it would be nice, particularly here and you know, where we live as minorities, and then you don't necessarily go to a Shari'i court and so on. It is nice that you designate an executor of your bequest. You say, so-and-so will be the executor of my bequest. And sometimes also it is nice to designate, can you do this? Can you designate like an arbitration entity, like an entity for arbitration in case of dispute? Yeah, can you? Okay. So it is nice also to say that in case of dispute, this is the entity that will arbitrate. This council, like of jurisprudence or fatwa, will arbitrate. Okay, so the executor of bequest, the sheikh will talk here about the executor of bequest, and then he says, تَجُوزُ الْوَصِيَّةِ إِلَى كُلِّ مُسْلِمٍ عَاقِلٍ عَدْلٍ مِنَ الذُّكُورِ وَالْإِنَاثِ بِمَا يَجُوزُ لِلْمُوصِي فِعْلُهُ مِنْ قَضَاءِ دَيْنِهِ وَتَفْرِيقِ وَصِيَّتِهِ وَالنَّظَرِ فِي أَمْرِ أَطْفَالِهِ. Okay. So it's valid to appoint any sane, trustworthy Muslim, man or woman, as an executor of the bequest to perform acts that are within the scope of legal capacity of the testator, such as paying his debts, distributing his bequest, and looking after his children's interests. So it is valid to appoint any sane, trustworthy Muslim man or woman as an executor of the bequest to perform acts that are within the scope of legal capacity of the testator, such as paying his debts, distributing his bequest, and looking after his children's interests. So your executor, the executor of your will, has to be a trustworthy Muslim man or woman. Trustworthy, sane Muslim man or woman. Woman. Man or woman. Okay, but what else? When it comes to, when it comes to money, there has to be rushd, which is financial prudence as well. He has to be rashid, meaning financially prudent, not safi, which is financially imprudent. So these are the conditions. And anyone who is like sane, prudent, trustworthy Muslim man or woman can be designated by the testator as an executor of the will after their death. They will execute their will, they will pay off their debts, they will distribute their bequests, and they will also look after their children's interests if they have children. Or they look after their dependents' interests in the sense that if some of their dependents also don't have the legal capacity to look after themselves, like some of their children may not be children, but they may be adults, but they are insane. In this case, he will appoint someone, designate someone to look after their interests. وَمَتَ أَوْصَى إِلَيْهِ بِوَلَايَةِ أَطْفَالِهِ أو مجانينه ثبت له ولاياتهم وينفذ تصرفه لهم بما لهم فيه الحظ من البيع والشراء وقبول ما يوهب لهم والإنفاق عليهم وعلى من تلزمهم مؤنته أو مؤونته بالمعروف والتجارة لهم ودفع أموالهم مضاربة بجزء من الربح. Whenever he assigns to the executor the guardianship to execute, whenever he assigns to the executor the guardianship of his children or insane dependents, it becomes effective. That guardianship becomes effective. The executor's dealings on their behalf will be valid in all transactions that are in their interest, such as selling and buying, accepting gifts, spending on them and their dependents within reason, and conducting trade on their behalf, as well as investing their money in mudaraba, partnerships. So when you become the guardian, when you become the executor of the will and the guardian of the dependents, whether they are children or insane, of someone, you will have the capacity, the legal capacity, to act on their behalf in anything that is in their interest. If you were found to have acted against their interest, your action will be voided by the court, by the authorities, if you have acted against their interest. So you're only allowed to act in their interest. Then the Sheikh said, but this acting in their interest also includes transactions that are risky, if you deem it to be in their interest, such as mudaraba, profit sharing, you know, sort of capital and labor, profit sharing, the mudaraba partnerships that we talked about before. So, because we can't tie your hands by, you know, and tell you invest their money, but in something that is guaranteed. Well, how do you invest in something that's guaranteed if riba is haram? So any investment will have some degree of risk. Therefore, we will allow you to take some risk, but we will not allow you to act against their interest. And then the Sheikh said, وَإِنْ اتَّجَرَ لَهُمْ فَلَيْسَ لَهُ مِنَ الرِّبْحِ شَيْءٍ وَلَهُ أَنْ يَأْكُلَ مِنْ مَالِهِمْ عِنْدَ حَاجَتِهِ بِقَدْرِ عَمَلِهِ وَلَا غُرْمَ عَلَيْهِ وَلَا يَأْكُلُ إِذَا كَانَ غَنِيًّا لِقَوْلِ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى وَمَنْ كَانَ غَنِيًّا فَلْيَسْتَعْفِفْ وَمَنْ كَانَ فَقِيرًا فَلْيَأْكُلْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. If the executor conducts any commercial transaction for them by himself, he will not be entitled to any part of the profit. However, if he is in need, he may sustain himself from their money, taking compensation that is commensurate with his labor, and he would not be liable. If he is well off, he should not take compensation, for Allah said, and whoever, when acting as a guardian, is self-sufficient, should refrain from taking a fee, and whoever is poor, let him take according to what is acceptable or to what is reasonable. So the Sheikh is saying here, if you act on their behalf, now you are the executor. Someone left, who is acting on their behalf without designation? The father. The father acts on behalf of his children without designation, because he is designated by God as their guardian. Then the father, you know, dies, and then the father designates someone. So the father will have more flexibility, as we will come to see. But the designated wasi, the designated executor, or the designated guardian, that is not the original guardian, because the original guardian has greater capacity, legal capacity, than the designated guardian. The father, who is the original guardian of his children, has greater capacity. The father can sell their property to them, to himself, because of his bountiful compassion. He can sell their property to himself because of his bountiful compassion. But others may not, as we will come to see. But so the designated guardians, they can act on in their on their behalf. They can basically trade on their behalf. They can establish partnerships in mudaraba and otherwise on their behalf. If they do and procure a profit for them, they don't take a share of the profit. If they do and they procure a profit for them, they don't take a share of the profit. What they can take if they are needy is what? Salary. Compensation, fixed compensation. Basically, that suits their, that meets their needs, but they cannot take, so meets their needs and their what? Their skills, or the required skills for the job, but whichever is what? Lower. So let us say you are, because sometimes the executor of bequest, they could be manager of a multi-billion dollar companies, right? Like if you know a billionaire dies, and designate someone to execute, to take care of their children, they have children, they will be taking care of so much money. So sometimes they need to dedicate their time for this job. So in order for them to dedicate their time for this job, we will have to allow them compensation. They cannot take a share of the profit. They will take compensation for the dedication of their time. And if they dedicate their time and they take compensation, then we have one of two things. We have their basically market value of what they do or based on their skills and their needs. Let us say they need $70 a day or they need $70 a month. And their salary based on the market value and their skill set is 80. They take 70. Let us say the 70 is basically the market value of the labor they provide, but they need 80 for their needs. They take 70. And they'll have to figure out how to get the difference. Because it is orphan's money, and orphan's money, you just can't be sort of liberal in... Huh? Okay, if he is unable to handle all that stuff by himself, then he appoints someone he would appoint a lot of people. Let's say it's a billion-dollar company. He would have a lot of people working for them. So he will cut down, basically, so he will appoint other people to do the work. Appoint other people to do the work, they will not be acting like a wasi, because he cannot appoint another wasi unless he was permitted by the original guardian to appoint other wasi. He will appoint workers, laborers, not other wasi, who will have the capacity of executor or the capacity of guardian. He will not be able to appoint other guardians unless he was permitted by the original guardian to appoint other guardians. But if he was not permitted by the original guardian to appoint other guardians, he will be appointing what? Employees. You know, workers. Yeah. So then he will take the least of the two as compensation because of the money that he's dedicating. He is not getting a share of the profit. He is not getting a share of the profit. He's getting compensation. He says here something important. He says, وَلَا غُرْمَ عَلَيْهِ وَلَا غُرْمَ عَلَيْهِ, and he will not be liable. He will not be liable. Meaning, if he does whichever transaction on their behalf or gets into whichever partnership on their behalf and loses, will he be liable? No, he will not be liable. You're always liable if you committed what? Ta'addi or tafreed, negligence or wrongdoing, transgression. Negligence or transgression. In Islam, you're always liable if you committed ta'addi or tafreed. If you committed, you know, gross negligence or wrongdoing, you're going to be liable. When we talk about you not being liable, we're talking about if you have not committed gross negligence or transgression, you're not liable here. Because you acted sort of in good faith on their behalf to invest their money. You're not liable for any losses. Okay. Then he says, وَمَنْ كَانَ غَنِيًّا, whoever, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says this, it's not him, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, وَمَنْ كَانَ غَنِيًّا فَلْيَسْتَعْفِفْ, and whoever is self-sufficient should refrain from taking a fee. It is, you know, to look after the interests of the orphan is a huge ta'a. It's a huge virtue. It's a great virtue. It's a great good deed to look after the interests of the orphans. And if you can do this without taking any compensation, because you have enough, you're ghani, you have enough, then you ought to do it without any compensation. Someone will say, but what about all the time I'm spending? What is my incentive? In this case, you know, be the overseer, but hire enough people to manage the property or to manage the assets so that you are the overseer, so that you're watching for the interest of the orphans, but without needing to spend too much time because you hired the right people to manage the property or to manage the company or to manage whatever, their wealth, their assets. Then the Sheikh said, وَلَيْسَ لَهُ أَنْ يُوصِيَ بِمَا أُوصِيَ إِلَيْهِ بِهِ وَلَا أَنْ يَبِيعَ وَيَشْتَرِيَ مِنْ مَالِهِمْ لِنَفْسِهِ وَيَجُوزُ لِلْأَبِي ذَلِكَ وَلَا يَلِي مَالَ الصَّبِيِّ وَالْمَجْنُونِ إِلَّا الْأَبُ أَوْ وَصِيُّهُ أَوْ الْحَاكِمُ. He, the executor, may not delegate the guardianship to someone else, nor may he be a party in sales transaction with them, his wards, protégés. However, all of this is permissible for the father. Thus, the custodian of the wealth of the children and the insane may only be the father, his agent, or the ruler. Okay, so he is saying that you, if you are the custodian of their assets, of their wealth, you cannot be party to any transaction with them. You cannot be party in any transaction with them because of the obvious conflict of interest. You know, two parties in the same transaction, if you should be looking out for the interest of these orphans, it is extremely hard to look out for their interest and look out for your own interest at the same time if you are parties to the same transaction. Therefore, don't do it. It's not permissible for you to do that. Also, you cannot pass on that power of guardianship to someone else unless you were permitted by the original guardian. These two caveats in being a guardian, a designated guardian, do not apply to the father who is the original guardian. The father can get into partnership with them, can sell to them, can buy from them. Why? Because of the presumed bountiful compassion of the father. Now, the father also has the power to designate guardians, to designate a guardian after a guardian. He has the power to do this. You don't have the power to do this as a designated guardian unless you are permitted. So who can be a guardian of people who need guardianship? Who needs guardianship? Children and insane people. Otherwise, people act on behalf of themselves, on their own behalf. You know, they don't need someone to act on their behalf unless they designated a wakil or an agent to act on their behalf. But when it comes to guardianship, children and insane people, they need guardianship. And for those whose guardian, the father is called original guardian. And then the executor, which is the designated guardian. It is a designated guardian. It's not an original guardian. He has these limited capacities. He would be designated by the father. Or designated, who else is an original guardian in some sense? Authorities, ruler. So the ruler, in the absence of the father, the authorities will be a guardian. And then the authorities will be able to designate an executor and another executor and another executor, authorities, in the absence of the father. Let us say the father himself has been interdicted and the father himself does not have the legal capacity. What is the default? Or the ruler, the authorities. When we talk about the ruler, we're talking about the community, guys. Because at the end of the day, the community is not going to act, they're not going to act, all of them, collectively all the time. So basically, it's a communal responsibility. And who will execute that responsibility? The authorities. because the community chose that we have this hierarchy and that we have this as the ruler and these are as the judges and so on. So it is a communal responsibility. In the absence of the father, the responsibility to take good care of the orphans and the insane and so on becomes the responsibility of the community. The community is not going to all. It's not going to be the sort of the right of everybody in the community. That doesn't make any sense. So the community chooses, you know, who acts and on their behalf in this regard, and that's the authorities, the ruler, al-hakim, or the viceroys, or the agents of the ruler, the judges. Okay, the final thing, which is the end of guardianship. He said, Sheikh Imam Qudam rahimahullah ta'ala said, فصل ولوليهم أن يأذن للمميز من الصبيان في التصرف ليختبر رشده والرشد الصلاح في المال فمن آنس رشده دفع إليه ماله إذا بلغ وأشهد عليه ذكرا كان أو أنثى. Subsection: The guardian may permit the discerning children to conduct business to test their prudence. Rushd. Rushd here means competence in money management. For those whom he feels to be competent, he should pass their money to them once they reach puberty. He should have this transfer of wealth witnessed. This applies to males and females alike. And for, you know, up until the common law in the 18th century in Britain, study the common law in the 18th century, females did not have the right to dispose of any property or manage any property or own anything. They were also owned, and wives were sold, and things of that nature. So if you're talking about women's rights and you know, the consistency of Sharia in this regard, this is not something that evolved, and Sharia did not basically conform to the whims of people and gave women their rights when such became sort of a logical necessity or logistical necessity. The Sharia had done this at a time when this was pretty strange in the world and pretty rare and uncommon. So he's saying that if you have a daughter and this daughter is financially prudent and she reaches puberty, give her her money. Let her take, you know, let her manage her money. Because she does have the legal capacity to do that. Keep in mind that nowadays, because people are a little bit, you know, people reach, take a little bit longer time to mature. Sometimes, you know, it tends to take them a little bit more than 50 or 60 years. to get to that point. But you may say we will have a cutoff of 21 or we will have a cutoff of 18. The government may say this. Well, in Islam, puberty was basically the what we went by. But it was not only puberty. It was puberty and rushd and prudence. So it was two... You have to... It is two conditions here, and the two are basically necessary to pass on the property. Two conditions have to be met. Two, not one. Rushd, prudence, and puberty. If they are rashid before they are adults, you know, discerning children that are rashid, you still don't allow them, because puberty is basically the floor, not the ceiling, the floor. So they have to have reached puberty, and what is puberty? If you don't have the biological markers, which we will not talk about, then it is 15 according to the majority, 18 for men and 17 for women according to the Hanafis, and there are basically disagreements within the Mazahib, particularly the Hanafis, but that is basically an approximate figure. So if you have not reached the biological markers, if you reach the biological markers, we go by the biological markers. If you have not reached the biological markers, then what is puberty? 15 according to the majority, 17 for women, and 18 for men, according to the Hanafis. Okay, so if you reach puberty and you have, you are prudent, financially prudent, then we give you your money. Can the governments nowadays establish a cutoff, like an age cutoff that is across the board, because they can't really, it is hard basically when you have like so much variability and so on. And so let's say governments would like to establish a cutoff and say that by this age, and they chose 18 or they chose 21. Can governments do this? Yes, governments have that flexibility to do that, according to some people. You know, I believe in that. I believe that governments do have much flexibility in this regard when it comes to, you know, these issues. So, yes, I think that governments will have the flexibility to determine the age so that they don't have to basically entertain each case separately and examine each child separately. What the Sheikh is saying is that as a guardian, whether you are the original guardian or you are the designated guardian, what you will be doing is when your kids, when the kids who own assets reach the discerning age, they are more than seven, for instance, and they reach the discerning age, or let's say they are, you know, maybe seven as a, but more than seven is you're already in within that discerning age. You get, like, you give your child who is 8 years old, you give them 10 cents and tell them go buy worm, like 10 cents. No, nothing is for 10 cents either. But you give them $2 and you tell them go buy something from them. You examine their financial prudence, and then you give them a little bit more and a little bit more. And once you feel comfortable that they are financially prudent and they reach puberty, you give them their money. Tell them that here is your money. And then you have this what? Witnessed. You get witnesses to basically see that you have given them, passed on their money to them and their property to them. That used to be the case in the past. It used to be overseen by judges and so on. But nowadays, governments may choose to have a certain age cutoff for passing on the property to children to manage it. Then the Sheikh said, فَإِنْ عَاوَدَ السَّفَهُ أُعِيدَ عَلَيْهِ الْحَجْرُ وَلَا يَنْظُرُ فِي مَالِهِ إِلَّا الْحَاكِمُ وَلَا يَنْفَكُّ الْحَجْرُ عَنْهُ إِلَّا بِحُكْمِهِ وَلَا يُقْبَلُ إِقْرَارُهُ فِي الْمَالِ وَيُقْبَلُ فِي الْحُدُودِ وَالْقِصَاصِ وَالطَّلَاقِ وَإِنْ طَلَّقَ أَوْ أَعْتَقَ نَفَذَ طَلَاقُهُ دُونَ إِعْتَاقِهِ. Then if they revert to financial imprudence and incompetence, interdiction will be reimposed on them. No one will have control over their money this time except the ruler, authorities, and the interdiction will only be lifted by a legal decree. Their acknowledgement of financial liabilities will not be accepted, but their acknowledgement will be accepted regarding hudud, designated penalties, retribution, and divorce. If he divorces a wife or emancipates a slave, his divorce will count, but not his emancipation, because he does not have the legal capacity to dispose of his property. So let us say that the child or the insane now recovered, and after the insane recovered, you gave them their property, or the child grew up, and after the child grew up, you gave them their property. A couple of years later, after you gave them their property, they went back to foolishness, or they became foolish, imprudent. They started to spend their money imprudently. What do we do now? Does the guardian take the property back? Should the guardian take the property back? Yes, makes sense. No, he cannot. Only the ruler, the authorities, will be able to take the property back in this case. Not the guardian, but the authorities. So if they reverted to foolishness or imprudence, you know, they are 21 and we give them their money, and by 23 we discover no, they are actually not prudent at all, so we want to take the money back from them, that is not going to be the guardian anymore, that is going to be the authorities. So people around them who are, you know, who are concerned for them, they should report this to the authorities, and this it will be interdiction or legal seizure of their property by a legal decree. And it would only be lifted by a legal decree. It's not the guardian now who's doing any of this. It's all legal decrees. So interdiction will happen by a legal decree, and it will be lifted by a legal decree. This is the business of the court now. It is not the business of the guardians. And he said also, okay, so we will apply the rulings of interdiction. And if we apply the rulings of interdiction, then your acknowledgement of liabilities and your any disposal or disposition of your wealth will not be accepted, even if you acknowledge liability. If we place interdiction, if legal seizure on someone's property, and they come and say, you know, Ali or Fatima, I borrowed money from Fatima last year. I borrowed $100,000 from Fatima last year. Fatima comes in and says he borrowed $100,000. That means that this legal seizure will not apply to the $100,000, and we have to give this money to Fatima. It is very possible that he made an agreement with Fatima. I will admit that I borrowed money from you. You tell them that you lent me money so that I can get that the seizure lifted off the $100,000, and we can divide it. I'll give you 10,000, take 90, give you 50. So the judge will not allow this. That is why his acknowledgments of liabilities are not permitted. When will the acknowledgment of liability be considered by the judge? If there is bayina, if there is proof. If there is proof that actually he did borrow from Fatima, or, you know, then certainly because of the proof. But not by his mere acknowledgement, because his mere acknowledgement could be sort of like a plot with someone else to get the seizure lifted off some of his property so that he could use it in whichever way he pleases. And we're doing this for their best interest. So we're placing this legal seizure on their property or their assets for their best interest until they, you know, regain their prudence, their sanity, or their prudence. And that's it with the book of bequests. Inshallah, next time we will start the book of inheritance, Kitab al-Mawarith. So before you come in, you know, if you need your cup of coffee, you should get your coffee on your way here so that the caffeine would have kicked in by the time you arrive. قول قولي هذا استغفر الله إليك سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك أستغفرك وأتوب إليك.